Than Blue by Willis and Shante. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you from Skid Row Studios. Our call-in number is 800-893-9562. Listen to us live, or you can download our show and past shows by Googling in skidrow.la and hit Qumran Report. This week on the Qumran Report, I will have some voices from the community talking about issues that is happening in the community, and we're going to hear from some community members also talking about the George Zimmerman verdict, the prison hunger strike, the Skid Row community, and excerpts from Frederick Douglass' famous speech on the 4th of July. Now, I'm delighted to have with us in the studio Jennifer Cartwell and Gisela Santiago from the ANSWER Coalition, and a portion of the ANSWER Coalition called WORD, and also Pastor Bill Wegman, who his church disciple Bill is, starting up here in the Skid Row community. Also, Earlene Anthony, my co-host, would update us on the Peace Kids from USC. And also, we have a couple guests sitting in, regular Michelle Autry. She's sitting in. She's going to chime in on our roundtable section. And also, sitting off to the side, we have PJ and Tyclon. We get some words from him from the, have to have him, we'll be hearing from them in the latter part of the show. Bay, yes. Sound like the Morris Science Temple to me. Okay, let's start off with, with Jennifer and Cassell. Jennifer, can you tell our listening audience a little about yourself first?
Okay.
What about your background?
Sure. My name is Jennifer Caldwell, and I'm an organizer with the ANSWER Coalition. ANSWER stands for Act Now to Stop War and End Racism. And we came about a couple days after 9/11 in response to what we knew would be basically the United States government using what happened on 9/11 as a pretext to go to war with Iraq, to go to war with Afghanistan, to go to war with everybody, which they are still doing to this day. Right now, we are involved in many different campaigns, one of which is anti-police brutality. And we just had an amazing demonstration just, was it yesterday? Thanks. It seems like a week ago, because we've been so busy, actually, ever since the Trayvon Martin verdict came in on Saturday. We've been busy with that. We've been out on the streets. We were in San Francisco and in Los Angeles every day since we came back from San Francisco. And also, as I said, organizing this statewide anti-police brutality demonstration, which occurred yesterday in Anaheim and which was a huge success.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you also brought with you another young lady over here, Gisela. And she's going to, can you tell us a little about your background? How did you get involved?
I'm also an organizer with Answer a Day, but I'm also an organizer with WORD, which stands for Women Organized to Resist and Defend. And we do police brutality work, you know, women's rights. So we've been there with Answer a Day too, throughout this whole week with the Trayvon Martin case, with the police brutality work that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm. So what are your some of your thoughts about the relationship of the police to the community, especially the younger portion of the community?
I think they're always out there to hassle the working community, especially the youth around my neighborhood. I live in South Central LA, and a couple of months ago, I just saw them stop these two young Latino men just for walking, and, mm-hmm. you know, it's a constant harassment that the young people around this area go through every day with the police.
Mm-hmm. Are these special gang units that mostly harass the community? Or?
No, they're just regular cops. But when we were out in Anaheim, most of the victims that were murdered by police were in part of the gang unit. And mm-hmm. they had mistaken a lot of them, saying that they had a gun in their hands when they had nothing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, let's get back over here with Jennifer. How did you first get involved with the Answer Coalition?
Well, when I first got involved, that was back before the invasion of Iraq. I saw that these anti-war demonstrations were going on, and I thought that I wanted to be a part of that, to be a part of what I believe is the only force that really creates social change, which is a mass independent people's movement out in the streets fighting for social change. That's how we got all the gains that we have. That's how in the 1930s we won rights as workers, union rights, organizing rights as workers, social security, unemployment insurance, everything that we won that way. And the civil rights movement as well, you know, that was won because people took to the streets because people, you know, as you know, I don't have to tell you this. So that was why I wanted to get involved with Answer, and I did. And since then, I've been involved with WORD also and with the National Committee to Free the Cuban Five. I just wanted to mention, too, if I could really quick, that we don't receive any corporate funding. We don't get you know, money from that kind of, we don't get government grants or anything like that. The only thing that we rely on is donations from ourselves as organizers and members and from, you know, supporters. And one of the things that we're doing to fundraise this coming Saturday, Friday, July 26th, which is the 60th anniversary of the beginning of the Cuban Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
On July 26, 1953, we are screening a film called Cordovision, which is really an extraordinary story. It's a documentary about the legendary Cuban photographer Alberto Diaz Gutierrez, also known as Corda. And Corda took that photograph
of Che Guevara.
Of Che Guevara, that iconic photograph, which is in fact the most reproduced photograph of the 20th century, and which was in fact the thing that actually got me to get involved with Answer and everything else in the first place, because I saw this guy's face on people's shirts and I was wondering, who is that guy? So I had to find out, and when I did, I wanted to get involved in, you know, like I say, an independent people's movement for social change.
Mm-hmm. And that film, is a film about the photographer, or is it about Che Guevara also?
No, it is about the photographer who took that photograph. It's a documentary about him, and it was made by a native Angeleno, Hector Cruz Sandoval. He'll be in attendance at the film, which is taking place, as I said, this Friday at the Downtown Independent at 251 South Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be having a meet and greet with the photographer, Hector Cruz Sandoval, at 8 p.m. And then the film will screen at 9. It's $15 general admission. And as I say, this is all this money goes to fund the Independent People's Movement. For tickets, you can go to corpsdivision.brownpapertickets.com or call 800-838-3006.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you a question in relationship to Cuba, the Cuban Revolution.
Because,
mm-hmm. You know, Cuba's just a little small place. Why do you think the United States fear Cuba so much? And let me just ask you that question first. And then I have a couple more. Why do you think the United States still fear a little small place like Cuba so much?
I think it's due to the fact that Cuba is such an example, and has been ever since the revolution, particularly, well, really to countries all over the world, and particularly to Latin American countries. And you can see now that other Latin American countries have, you know, decided that they would like to take this path as well towards creating a more equitable world for the people who reside there.
Mm-hmm. Because I think Cuba have one of the best health systems and doctors and stuff that you probably have in the, I know it's better than the United States, without a doubt, in terms of serving the people, the health. And then, I think the remarkable thing to me about Cuba is you still got Fidel Castro and Raul Castro, who go all the way back to the beginning of the revolutions. That's still around. And then also there is a prison, Guantanamo, that's situated right there. That's where the hunger strike is also going on over there, right?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Very insulting to the Cubans who deplore such a place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you also mention, it's an individual that walks around the streets of Miami who a lot of the, you know, they always accuse they used to accuse Cuba of being a communist. You know, that was the main issue until the Soviet Union fell. And now they always talking about terrorists. But isn't there a terrorist that walk around the streets of Miami right now that's responsible for blowing up planes and all that kind of stuff?
Yes.
Can you touch on that a minute?
Yes, his name is Luis Posada Carriles, mm-hmm. and he is indeed a terrorist. He's bragged about it even. He considers the acts that he committed, including bombing a Cuban plane and killing everyone on board, to be something that he does not regret doing. And he's also been responsible for funding other bombs that were planted in Cuba after that. That took place in 1976. These other bombs were planted in the mid-90s, around the time when Cuba started to rely more on tourism to create hard currency to keep, you know, the economy going and to fund the many benefits that Cuban citizens enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And he is indeed walking the streets of Miami. He even has a street named after him,
mm-hmm.
which is very ironic that the Cuban Five, on the other hand, are in prison, incarcerated. And I know that this ties in with campaigns that you all, and as well as us, mm-hmm. are involved in, and that is the prison industrial complex And the right now, the Pelican Bay campaign, the hunger strike.
Mm-hmm. Can you just touch a little on explaining who the Cuban Five?
The Cuban Five are five men who came to the United States to basically keep track of terrorist organizations based in Miami who had long committed acts of terror against Cuba. And they came here to mainly just observe. They had no access to anything secret or classified ever. They observed planes coming and going, and they reported that in order to prevent terrorist acts.
Mm-hmm.
And they collected a lot of information on these terrorist organizations doing that. When they turned this information over to the FBI, hoping that they would, you know, do the right thing, instead they arrested them and put them in jail and called them mm-hmm. spies and accused them of espionage, even though, as I say, mm-hmm. even according to high-ranking military officials in the United States government, they were never privy to any classified documents.
Okay. Gazella, let me ask you this. In terms of police brutality, is there a difference between what's happening in the Latino community and the African-American community in terms of the way the police view the community?
No, I think that's like a misconception. That I think it's like the same struggle that both of the communities go through. They both get stopped and frisked. Like we have that, they had that program, I think, in New York, Stop and Frisk.
Mm-hmm.
They just had the right to just stop any young colored man, you know, to see what they were doing because they racial profile a lot. I think we both communities go through the same thing, you know, racial profiling. So I think it's the same struggle.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me also ask you this. What are your, how did the George Zimmerman verdict, what are your thoughts on that?
We're
going to come back to it because I'm going to pull in the whole... We're going to have a round table on it later, but I'm interested in your thoughts.
It was horrible. When we heard the verdict, I think I was just mad because it really meant we will get justice. That mm-hmm. if you're a colored person, your life doesn't matter. And that's when we just felt angry. And, you know, the only way to make that a verdict change is to go out in the streets mm-hmm. and protest.
Okay, right. What do you think about... now they're thinking about two other options that they have in terms of a civil suit and then the possibility of the federal government bringing a case also. What do you think about the fact that when you have individuals that have their day in court and the jury speaks, what do you think about that process?
Well, all the jury except for one person was white, so I don't... think it was hard for them to really relate to Trayvon Martin. You know, they couldn't see that could have been their son because they don't have to go through that as white people. They don't have to walk down the street and feel like the police is following them just because of the color of their skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that process worked there. It was mm-hmm. a failure that it was an all white jury. Mm-hmm. You know, it would have been hard for them to relate to Trayvon Martin.
Okay. One more question, and I want to move over and talk to Pastor Bill over there a while. But I also want to ask you, what is the situation in the community in terms of the Latinos and the African-American gangs? These were so hostile towards each other, which it was a relationship in terms of determining the economic development of the community. What's happening with the gangs and the relationship with each other?
I mean, gangs are still out there, and I think it's because they really don't have an outlet. That's like the only way they know they have learned to kind of like fight with each other instead of seeing that their problems is not with each other, like black against brown, but it's all the funding that they cut to our communities. Our communities are the first ones that get fundings for school cut, you know, social programs. So I don't know.
Okay. Because in a little while, I also want to, but maybe this is a question I can ask Pastor Bill, because I want to know about the interfaith, their relationship to all these things that's happening in the community. Okay, so I want to turn to Pastor Bill. He just started a church down here in the Skid Row area. Pastor Bill, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you. Thank you, Melvin.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little about how did you first come to the Skid Row area, get involved with the Skid Row area?
It's a bit of a story, actually. It's kind of a long story, but I'll make it as short as possible. I started ministry in San Francisco, in the Tenderloin of San Francisco, and God called me into ministry. And I was a general contractor for 30 years, and it was a drastic call. Everything kind of just was taken out from underneath me. He removed the business from me, my homes. Everything I had just kind of got swept out from underneath my feet, and God called me into ministry through a it was hard to explain. I actually became suicidal at one point because I lost so much so fast. And from that happening, I was already a Christian, but I had turned back to the Lord and realized that I had put all my faith in what I was doing, everything that I had, my business, money. I had done exactly what I was telling everybody else not to do. And then when God delivered me from all that, he brought me into ministry. But I started in San Francisco with another church called New Life in Christ, and was brought up in that church and then ordained by Pastor Charles. And it was a similar situation. The Tenderloin of San Francisco was like Skid Row, but on a smaller scale. Mm-hmm. But it's just as the same things happening. It's just as bad, and it's just as many things going on. And the presence of evil is very similar. And then about a year ago, the Lord called me to Los Angeles, and I had never been here before. I knew nothing about Skid Row, knew nothing about really Los Angeles except what I read or saw on TV and heard over the years. I grew up in Western New York, Buffalo, New York, actually. And I got to Los Angeles, and I got off the bus, and I said, okay, God, what am I supposed to do here? I have no idea where I'm going or what I'm doing. I just followed the direction. And then I saw Skid Row, and I said, whoa, I don't know if I can do this, God. This is too much for me. I'm just one person. I don't know what I'm going to do, you know? And I stayed, and I just felt the voice of the Lord saying that he was going to be with me, and he would stand with me, and I had to continue to go forward. And I spent the first probably 6 months just walking the streets and praying with people and just trying to uplift people and give them hope and just get to know people, just literally being with them. I slept in the streets, and I slept in the missions for a while until I ran out of free time in the missions, and I slept in the streets, and I've continued to do that up until about a week ago. I sleep on the street, you know, literally, and I slept on Santee and 9th mm-hmm. for quite some time, and I slept on 4th and San Pedro for quite some time. Mm-hmm. I would preach, and when I came about 5 months ago, a spot opened up at the World Share Outreach Mission. They took a sanctuary that was meant for 5 Breads, 2 Fish, a ministry that was here for a little while. They had that, and they gave it up, and World Share took it over, and they opened it up for numerous ministers to get little spots in there. We all got different time slots, and they could preach or have a worship ministry or feed or whatever they wanted to do, but something to contribute through God to the people of Skid Row. And there was a slot all the way across the board, and every morning from 7 to 9:30. So 7 days a week, I was in there preaching the word. And after that, I would walk the streets and pray with people. The same thing I was doing before, just getting more and more involved. And it kept on going. And I started seeing a lot of people changing, people being brought to the Lord. A difference was taking place in the people. And it's a struggle, though. You know, it's always a struggle, and there's always a lot of opposition. It would hurt me sometimes when I would see people, just the devastation, you know. It wasn't, I know a lot of us in the world, a lot of people in the world would look at us in Skid Row and think that, you know, we're just the lost people, and they just kind of pushed them out of the way and just put everybody in one spot and we'll forget about them. But it's not like that. It's not, you know, we're all people. We're all God's children, you know, and mm-hmm. just...
Well, let me ask you this. What is the name of your church, and what's the time slot, if people want to come visit you?
Disciple church? Builders Ministries is the ministry God called me. That's the name of the church. And we're open right now. I'm actually, as of August 1st, taking over the church completely for Disciple Builders Ministries. Mm-hmm. God has allowed me to rent that whole building out. So it's changing from being a place of many ministries to one ministry. Okay. But we're going to have, I'm going to keep the same time slot we've got now, which is 7 in the morning we open, until 9:30 in the morning is the first service.
Do you have coffee and all that kind of stuff up in there?
Occasionally I have coffee if I have the finances for it and the donations. Mm-hmm. But primarily it's just, we just
Because come in. Well, the reason I mentioned that is because you mentioned San Francisco, and I always thought that from a social work point of view, San Francisco was so far ahead of what's happening down here in Skid Row. Because they had an organization called Glide Memorial.
Right, right.
You know, that 20 years ahead of what's happening down here. The things they're trying to do in Skid Row right now, they was doing that 15, 20 years ago up north.
Right.
In San Francisco. And one of the things I've noticed about most ministry, you know, when they reach out to touch the needs of the people, is they also provide for some of the physical needs. And one of the things most of these missions that got off the ground, I remember in, back in the days, 60s and the 70s, mm-hmm. they used to start off with oatmeal. They first, that's all they had, oatmeal and bread and coffee. But that still provided some of the needs. So I think it's also worth thinking about, especially the corner where you had 5th and San Pedro.
It's right, you know, right square in the middle.
The nickel, 5th Street, as they call the nickel, that runs right through there. Now, how do you minister to the homeless?
Oh, I have most of the people of Skid Row that are homeless, and there's a lot of, there's always new people coming in, always, and it's mm-hmm. always kind of an influx, and there's some going out and some coming in. Some are being housed, and some people don't get up and they'll move out. They'll get jobs and move out. But I have service every morning, and I spend time with people in the streets. I have service every morning. I have prayer with everybody. Also, what I'm doing is... as I have a Bible study is going to start in the afternoons, and we're going to have a service in the evening. So we're going to be open at least three times a day. It's going to be open most of the day. But what I've started to do and what I want to implement is actually disciple building, just bringing people to the Lord, but also opening up houses in the communities, renting mm-hmm. houses, kind of similar to what Victory Outreach has done. Mm-hmm. It's a similar situation, similar ministry, and allowing people to get in will house them, bring them into the houses and start to disciple them that way. And as they come out, I'm also a general contractor. God has opened a door for me recently that I was, for 30 years, I've been a general contractor in construction trades. And recently, God has kind of opened that door back up. And I saw that about 4 years ago when I first got into ministry, is something that God had allowed me to do. That's part of where I got disciple builders from, building disciples and also mm-hmm. being disciples and builders.
Okay. Let me ask you one more question, and then we're going to take a break for the community calendar, and then we're going to come back for a couple more things. I want to do this little piece on Frederick Douglass on the 4th of July speech that he made, to touch on that. But how do you minister to people coming out of prison?
It's funny you're saying that because I've recently had a few guys that have just come in that have just recently got out of prison. They came in and they had just the clothes on their back, and I literally helped them to find clothing and direct mm-hmm. them through World Share, trying to find them some resources as far as getting them hooked up with different places, looking for housing. And over at the Weingart, they've got a program there for housing for people right fresh out of prison. Mm-hmm. I've helped to direct them to that. And just strictly, a lot of times, just praying with them, giving them hope, allowing them to know that God is still there. God loves them.
Mm-hmm. And then we just got an email from Hunger Action LA. We had them here as a guest. Mm-hmm. And they have an excellent little booklet. You remember, you know, that little booklet, that resource booklet?
Mm-hmm. The little red book,
and they in the email in the next week, they just got the new edition coming out. So I think it would be so nice to find out a way to get them to donate your ministry some of these books, because the people that's coming through, you know, the book would be so useful to them, because it has all this. It was one of the best up to date resources that I can think of. Okay, we're going to come back to the round table where we can pull everybody in for a great discussion and share. But let's move to our community calendar, and then we'll come back for our round table.
This is the community calendar for the month of July. The Veterans Community Theater Workshop will be held this Tuesday, July the 23rd, from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. The location is the Vortex, 2341 East Olympic Boulevard. And that's at the corner of Olympic and Santa Fe. The information number is 213-479-1764. The participants in the workshop are currently working on becoming a stage manager and also 10-minute plays submission for the NAACP Festival of Short Plays. The upcoming guest on the Cool Run Report Monday, July 29th, will be OG in Service, and he will be talking about taking players from the award-winning Skid Row 3-on-3 Streetball League, also discussing the upcoming season, and he will speak about the aspects of life, future, and career. The motto for the 3-on-3 is, it's more than a game. And if you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com, attention Earlene Anthony. And the call-in number once again for the show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Earlene Anthony. Now, on July the 5th, 2013, at the Friday morning meeting of ICUJP, Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace at Emmanuel Presbyterian Church, I did a short reflection on Frederick Douglass' famous 4th of July speech, What to the Slave is the 4th of July? And I'd like to play a portion of that.
Reflections, and thank you, Melvin. Now a few more have gathered, so it's good to go ahead.
Okay. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. Since this is one day after the 4th of July, I would like to read a few excerpts from Frederick Douglass' famous speech that he delivered on the 5th of July, about the 4th of July. It's a very long speech, so I'm only going to read maybe about 5 minutes from some of the important sections of it. But first, let me just give you just a little bit of information about Frederick Douglass. His real name was Frederick Augusta Washington Bailey. He was born February 18, 1818, and he died February the 20th, 1895. He was an American social reformer, orator, writer, statesman. After escaping from slavery, he became a leader of the abolitionist movement, gaining note for his dazzling oratory and an incisive anti-slavery writing. He stood as a living counterexample to slaveholders' arguments that slaves did not have the intellectual capacity to function as independent American citizens. Many Northerners also found it hard to believe that such a great orator had been a slave. Now, on July the 5th, 1852, Douglass delivered an address to the ladies of the Rochester Anti-Slavery Sewing Society, which eventually became known as What to the Slave is the 4th of July, is what this speech became. Now this 4th of July is yours, not mine. You may rejoice, I must mourn. To drag a man in fetters into the grand illuminated temple of liberty and call upon him to join you in joyous anthems where inhuman mockery and sacrilege irony. Do you mean, citizens, to mock me by asking me to speak today? If so, there is a parallel to your conduct. And let me warn you that it is dangerous to copy the example of a nation whose crime lowering up to heaven was thrown down by the breath of the Almighty, bearing that nation in irrecoverable ruins. I can today take up the plaintive lament of a peel and war-smitted people. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yes, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hang our harps upon the willow in the midst thereof. For there, they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they who wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. Fellow citizens, above your national tumultuous jaw, I hear the mournful wail of millions whose chain, heavy and grievous yesterday, are today rendered more intolerable by the jubilee shouts that reach them. What am I to argue that it is wrong to make men's root, to rob them of their liberty, to work them without wages, to keep them ignorant of their relationship to their fellow men, to beat them with sticks, to flay their flesh with a lash, to load their limbs with iron, to hunt them with dogs, to sell them at auction, to shunder their family, to knock out their teeth, to burn their flesh, to starve them into obedience and submission to their master? Must I argue that a system thus marked with blood and stained with pollution is wrong? No, I would not. I have better enjoyment for my time and strength than such arguments would imply. What then remains to be argued? Is it that slavery is not divine? That God did not establish it? That our doctors of divinity are mistaken? There's blasphemy in the thought that which is inhuman cannot be divine. Who can reason on such a proposition? They that can, may, I cannot. The time for such argument is past. At a time like this, scorching irony, not convincing argument, is needed. Oh, had I the ability, and could I reach the nation ear, I would today pour out a fiery stream of biting ridicule, blasting reproach, withering sarcasm, and stern rebuke. For it is not light that is needed, but fire. It is not the gentle shower, but thunder. We need the storm, the whirlwind, the earthquake. The feeling of the nation must be quickened. The conscience of the nation must be roused. The propriety of the nation must be startled. The hypocrisy of the nation must be exposed. And its crimes against God and man must be proclaimed and denounced. What to the American slave is your 4th of July? I answer, a day that reveals to him more than all other days in the year the gross injustice and cruelty to which he is the constant victim. To him, your celebration is a sham. Your boasted liberty and unholy license, your national greatness, swelling vanity, your sounds of rejoice are empty and heartless. Your denunciation of tyrants, brass-fronted imprudence, your shouts of liberty and equality, hollow mockery. Your prayers and hymns, your sermons and your thanksgiving, with all your religious parade and your solemnity are to him mere bombast, fraud, deception, impiety, and hypocrisy. a thin veil to cover up crimes which would disgrace a nation of savages. There is not a nation on the earth guilty of practice more shocking and bloody than are the peoples of the United States at this very hour. Go where you may, search where you will, roam through all the monarchies of the old world, travel through South America, search out every abuse, and when you have found the last, lay your facts by the side of the everyday practices of this nation. And you would say with me that for revolting barbarity and shameless hypocrisy, America reigns without rival. Fellow citizens, I would not enlarge further on your national inconsistencies. The existence of slavery in this country brands your republicanism as a sham, your humanity as a base pretense, and your Christianity as a lie. It destroys your moral power abroad. It corrupts your politicians at home. It saps the foundations of religion. It makes your name a hissing and a byword to a mocking earth. It is the antagonistic forces in your government, the only thing that seriously disturbs and endangers your union. It fretters your progress. It is the enemy of improvement, the deadly foe of education. It fosters pride, it breeds insolence, it promotes vice, it shelters crime. It is a curse to the earth that supports it. And yet you cling to it as if it was the sheet anchor of all your hopes. Allow me to say in conclusion, notwithstanding the dark picture I have this day presented of the state of the nation, I do not despair of this country. There are forces in operation which must inevitably work the downfall of slavery. The arm of the Lord is not short, and the doom of slavery is certain. I therefore leave off where I began. Thoughts expressed on one side of the Atlantic are distinctly heard on the other. The far-off and almost fabulous Pacific rolling grandeur at our feet. The fiat of the Almighty, let there be light, has not yet spent its forces. No abuse, no outrage, whether in taste, can hide itself from the all-pervading light. The iron shoe and crippled foot of China must be seen in contrast with nature. Africa must rise and put on her yet unwoven garment. Ethiopia shall stretch out her hand unto God. Thank you.
Okay, that's comments on Frederick Douglass' famous speech on what to a slave is the 4th of July. I want to move into our roundtable discussion. Also, sitting in, I want to bring in a couple of our other guests. I have Michelle's slid up out of here a minute. Tyclon. Tyclon?
Hey, how's it going?
Fine. Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah, that's
okay. Tyclon Solid Bay, right? I'm going to bring you in because we're going to open up this to the round table. The first thing I want to open, and we also got PJ over there also going to say a few words. I want to get the thoughts on, and then move around, you know, a few comments. What are your thoughts on the George Zimmerman verdict?
Straight total injustice. I'm saying that's a mockery. How simple and plain. I mean, I have one question. Isn't a dispatcher supposed to be like some of authority, like a police or something? She told him, don't get out the car, don't follow the boy. They was on their way or whatever, and everything would have been handled. He's not even a police, so what gives him the authority to just kill somebody? Screw a gun law, you disobeyed a public figure, protection figure, you know, supposedly in the lack of authority that we do have here nowadays.
Okay, well, let me ask you this then. I know when this incident first happened, I know George Zimmerman, they didn't arrest him on the spot or bring any charges or anything like that. But what do you think about, and then because of the pressure of the people, the protests, et cetera, like that, then they finally decide to charge him. Now, what do you think about but when a citizen of the United States have their day in court and the jury speaks? What do you think about that? Should that have any power or anything like that?
I feel the jury is only people. They can be bought and sold or however, but they stuck their minds on one thing and seen it their way. Uh-huh. But I don't know what eyes they were looking through.
But did the prosecution... I don't want to hear...
I really ain't followed too much of the trial. I'm going to be all the way honest because I thought that justice would prevail. I mean, a young man's dead. He should be... After he disobeyed a public figure. So I really ain't... I thought it was going to be open and shut, you know?
Okay. PJ, what are your thoughts
least
on
manslaughter.
On that George Zimmerman verdict? This is PJ here also.
Obviously, it was an injustice, and it was definitely, like, negligence on part of the justice system to allow someone like that to be, like, basically now just let go. And it was called for second-degree murder, and it was rather impassioned. And somebody told me that the definition of that was that that person, upon leaving the house, had the intent on going and killing someone. And how do we know that he did not have that intent? How do we know that he did not want to racially profile somebody and take his or her life, for that matter, just because they were of a different race? We really can't conjecture that it wasn't, second-degree murder.
Okay. Pastor Bill, what are your thoughts on the George Zimmerman verdict?
I didn't follow the trial, but the outcome shocked me. It really did. And from what I've learned afterwards about the whole thing, I'm really shocked. I don't understand how... I didn't know about these laws in Florida, that this stand your ground law thing. It's crazy. I just can't believe that.
Pretty much premeditation, I would say.
I can't believe there's someone
motivated
that. Yeah, and I think he said it, or my brother said it plainly right there, that George Zimmer was told to stand down. He was told by an authoritative figure, a police officer or the dispatcher, to stay in his car, and they were on their way. They would handle it. And
George Zimmer.
He went forward on his own.
Okay, before I make a comment, I want to hear Gisella and Jennifer. What are your thoughts on the George Zimmerman verdict?
Yeah, it was an injustice, and that stand your ground law that got him off is not even a just law, because Marisa Alexander, who also used that stand your ground law, she got found guilty, and she used it. She just shot up in the air to protect herself and her children from her abusive husband. And they found her guilty.
And gave her how much time?
22 years.
Wow.
And Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman wasn't even found guilty for killing and murdering Trayvon Martin.
Okay. Jennifer, what's your thoughts on the Trayvon Martin verdict?
Yeah. The thing is that the whole system is racist. That's the thing. The system itself is racist, and that's what the Trayvon Martin verdict has shown. Slavery was once legal. And, as Frederick Douglass was talking about, and you were talking about so eloquently in reading those excerpts from his speech, it was once illegal for mixed races to marry. It was once illegal for black people to sit at the lunch counter. So just because something is a law or not a law doesn't mean that it's just. And this was certainly not just. And it shows, I believe, that it's built into the system. These laws are made to protect certain people, and those people are not the oppressed communities.
And how do the community, just like what you mentioned, all those incidents that used to be the law, how do the community make changes in that?
They make that, as I said before, through mass action, through mass independent people's movement action, uniting together. That was one thing that happened in the anti-police brutality demo, as well as Gisella can speak more to that too, the Trayvon Martin demonstrations that we went to. We've been marching every day in Trayvon Martin marches. Is the unity of black and brown people, white people, Asian people. There were people of all nationalities there at these actions, uniting together, and that's what we have to do.
Beautiful. Michelle, you stepped out on us a minute. The question I want to ask you is about, what are your thoughts on the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman verdict?
Well, I'm hurt because I have a son. And what happened to Trayvon Martin happened to every mother, every black mother. You know, I met his mother, and it just deeply hurts me that, you know, we're being treated as black people like we were in 1913, in 1813. And very quickly, I wrote an article called No New Age Return to Slavery. And it's a racial issue, but it's an issue of oppression.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, you know, it's just like the divine right theory, the right to stand, to kill a black man in cold blood and reverse culpability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's institutionalized, and I think it signifies a rise in white supremacy in which all conscious people, okay, whether you are Caucasian, white, or black, are called now to stand against, you know, this rise in conservatism. It's as if, you know, right now they're claiming that they're God's chosen people and they have a right, you know, to exterminate anyone that they feel is in any way threatening them. This young man, I feel, was innocent.
Well, let me ask this question then, because I want to get to, without time left, I want to get to the heart of some questions I want to ask. First of all, what can we do to keep our young people, you know, all people of color, out of this prison industrial complex? Who want to comment on that? I'd like to make some little short comments as we go around.
Yeah,
what can we do to keep them out of the prison industrial
complex? I think first and foremost, for my standpoint as a pastor, is turning our lives to the Lord. We look to God, and then the two major commandments that Jesus Christ himself had given us is to love your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and to love your neighbor as yourself. And mm-hmm. your neighbor is everybody else around you. No matter what color you are, who you are, your neighbor is everybody else in the world. And to love each other, to show love towards your brothers and sisters, to esteem your brothers and sisters more highly than yourself,
mm-hmm.
How can you go wrong when you do that?
Mm-hmm.
You can't go wrong doing that.
Okay.
I would also say another thing I think goes a long way towards that is getting involved with this movement that I've been speaking of and others have been speaking of, Michelle, Gisela, talking about young people getting involved in fighting against this oppression in uniting, because another thing is, I think, just as we found with the, you know, the anti-police brutality demonstration was led by 30 families who you've heard about on the news over the years who've been killed by police, who's had their family members killed by police. And it's so isolating, like before they realized, you know, before they met each other and they got together, you know, and now a new organization is going to be born out of this because they're planning to continue to fight against this oppression mm-hmm. together, which is an awesome, awesome thing. Because it's easy when you're experiencing this oppression to just feel isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them said that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then I think about how important it is. To me, one of the things that come out of this whole tragedy of the George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin situation, one of the positive things for me is to see so many young people of color working as a unit. Because it have always bothered me to see the repetition of things that was happening in the 60s after the Vietnam War. When you had masses of people, a lot of them led by Dr. King, that came together to change the system. And now we're dealing with different kind of problems in the internet, the IT world, the internet's around now. And I think we can use those kind of tactics of the mass movement of all of that, but we still got to be more creative. And I think one of the center points that we have to start with is creating more jobs for our young people. For all young people of color, we need to be more creative in creating job programs for them. This is the only thing that's going to make a dent into getting out of this whole crazy gang banging thing that's tearing up our community, because If we don't get that gangbanging stuff out of the way, we're not going to have a lot of business that's going to come through and develop the community and create jobs and all of that. So I'm hoping that this is a good thing, a positive thing to come out of this tragedy. Mm-hmm. And it's time for a young people's movement. I don't want to see a movement led by the old heads that was around in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. Their time is over. Young people got to step up. I was hoping that these females on this jury would change the trend of a male-dominated society, but that's a whole nother show. And we're winding down. Before I wind down, I have to get Earlene. Can you say something quickly about the Peace Center? I was hoping.
Just quickly about the Peace Kids. The program is going on now, and it's for young people age 5 through 17. And we're teaching them to be peacemakers and about peace heroes. And I'm just going to quickly give the contact information.
Yeah.
It's located at the United University Church on the campus of USC, 817 West 34th Street. That's right at the corner of Jefferson and Hoover. And the contact information is Dr. Susan Stouffer. She's the Peace Center Director, 213-748-0209, extension 13.
Okay, Jennifer, I'm going to give you the closing comments and your contact information. We're winding your closing comments and the contact information for those that want to get involved.
Yeah, well, basically, I just say that. Get involved. Let's all unite. Let's hit the streets. Let's change this system. Let's shut it down. And you can go to answerla.org to find out more about that very thing.
Okay. And we're winding down. Now, next week on the Qumran Report, we will have with us in the studio from the award-winning 3-on-3 Basketball League, and they will talk about other aspects of their life, future, and careers. I wanted a special thank to Pastor Bill Wegman, and go out and check out his church, Disciple Builders, on the corner of 5th and San Pedro. He's there from 7 o'clock in the morning every day. Jennifer Conwell, the Answer Coalition, Gisela Santiago, the Answer Coalition in Word. Also, Michelle Entry sitting in with us here, Ty Klon and PJ. So thank you very much for being in here with us. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. You can check out our shows on iTunes, Facebook, Stitcher, and skidrow.la. Thank you for tuning into the Qumran Report. And from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with the song that opened the show, Darker Than Blue, by Willis and Shante of Positive Light Ministry.
Thank you.
Are we going?